Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. My name is Matt Hudson from What I Watch Tonight, and joining me from across the pond, I'd like this man to stalk me to Italy as well, I guess. It's John Burke from BurkeReviews.com. How are you, sir?
I'm equal.
Ah, I like you. If I was... Oh, God. What, listen, I need to start writing down these film-related puns, because I equal... What would you be to be the equaliser? We'll find... anyone answers on a postcard or in the comments below, please. But yes, should start scripting these awful movie-based puns, which inform everybody what we're talking about, as if the episode title didn't. You probably know what we're talking about this week. But before we get to that, though, I must know, my friend, it's good to hear your voice again. Same time again each week, but I love hearing it. How are you doing? Are you keeping Florida safe and well?
I am doing my best. I am a little sleepy, but like in a good way, you know, but I'm like, man, a nap? I don't need a nap. Do I need a nap? Maybe. I don't know. Could go for another cup of coffee, maybe. I don't know. I'm a little sleepy, but otherwise good. I mean, I'm feeling a little bit of pressure off, and it's nice.
Good. Good. Well, I know we're going to get to that, so I won't press you on that anymore, my friend. I will leave the tension hanging there a bit longer. But I'm glad to hear you're okay, my friend. We're always out for another coffee. PSL season has started. Pumpkin spice latte season has started. Yeah, it is. It's the nights are getting darker. They're drawing in. The spooks are getting ready to come out. Not quite yet, though, because it's still almost 80 degrees here at 20 to 10 in the evening in the UK. What is that all about? I don't want to know, but I'm sweating here for the BAMP, but I'll do anything for you guys, and I would do that. Another thing I did do this week, John, is watch tonight's film. Now, if you're new to the BAMP, each week we drop a non-spoiler review of the biggest or most interesting or only release of the week, and we give our thoughts and opinions on it and drop a short spoiler minisode in the following days. And generally, we don't tell each other our thoughts beforehand. And tonight's film is one that I have no idea what JB thought coming out of it. Now, going into it, I think we both had similar thoughts of which all started with a sigh and ended with a sigh. But I'm very interested to see what you thought about tonight's film, which is The Equalizer 3, the third and apparently final part of the Robert McCall trilogy. It's directed once again by Antoine Fuqua and written by Richard Wenk, who has written all of the trilogy now, alongside Michael Sloan and Richard Lindheim. And of course, John, of course, it stars Denzel Washington as Robert McCall. Cool in name, cool in nature. Dakota Fanning is back as Emma Collins. And then we have Eugenio Mastrandia, David Denman, Gaia Scodelaro, Remo Gironi, Andrea Scarduzio, and Andrea Dodero as our secondary cast as well. My Italian lessons should have come in a little bit better then, but alas, sorry. What is it about, John? The film, Robert McCall, which is Denzel Washington, finds himself at home in southern Italy, but he discovers his friends are under the control of local crime bosses, don't we all? As events turn deadly, McCall knows what he has to do. Become his friend's protector by taking on the mafia. Yes, so Robert McCall he's now taking on the mafia, though. How well is it doing with the fans and critics? Equalizer 1 seemed to do quite well with fans and critics. The second one, not so much. This one, though, on Rotten Tomatoes, currently sitting at 76% with critics, quite a good score, and 94% with the fans. Metacritic has it at 57, IMDb 7.1 out of 10, and Letterboxd 3.1 out of 5. And if you've been looking at the news today, hopefully those 12 people who were offered $50 to review a film 5 years ago didn't review this as well, but it's all hoopla. So Equalizer, top level then, my thoughts on the first two films. First film, I think, is pretty solid. I think the first film's pretty good. It's Denzel as an action star. I like it. It's fine. Second one, I think, is nonsense. I think it's nonsensical. I just think they wanted to make a film, and then when they got to shooting, thought, oh no, we haven't written a script, or we don't even have a plot. Do something. And then we get to this one, but Equalizer and Equalizer 2, JB, what are your thoughts on the first two installments?
Pretty much exactly the same. The first one is really, I had not seen it when it came out. Like, I saw it the year that 2 came out. Like, I watched it in preparation to watch 2. And I liked 1 enough that I was like, I went into 2 kind of excited. We forget, I think, that Pedro Pascal is the villain.
I did forget.
And, which is a shame because it's like he was, I thought he was still good in it, but it goes real off the rails in that movie. The Hurricane is the third act and it's preposterous.
Stupid.
Still, it's Denzel. It's hard to not enjoy Denzel being Denzel. But yeah, you know, I haven't seen the second one and I feel like this movie wanted us to remember things about the character that I definitely don't.
I remembered nothing about the second film, clearly.
A fun thing about this being the third film, two yes. fun things, I think. One, I had an older lady in the theater that I saw this in stop me after the movie and ask me if it was a sequel. And I'm like, I'm just thinking, like, it's got 3 in the title. I don't know.
It's very sweet, isn't it?
It doesn't inherently mean it's the third one, but the way the 3 is placed in the title definitely seems to imply it. But I was, you know, a kind answer. Yeah, it's the third one, actually.
What a kind young man you are, John.
Yeah, you know, the sad thing, I don't know how much older she actually is to me at this point. It's one of those things, in my head, I'm always like, well, they're older, but it's like, I'm 8 years older than you, youngin. I'm like, oh, no, I have no idea. But the other thing, though, is that you mentioned, I think, in the tagline that this is the final one.
Apparently so.
I don't think the movie knows that. Like, the movie does not seem like it's ending this film. In fact, I saw an interview. I didn't hear him. I saw that he was talking about doing a prequel with de-aging tech on Denzel. Like, he's Antoine Fuqua is not done. Maybe the studios are, but
no, I mean, before we get into the film, it's made nearly $70 million worldwide already. It's only been out for 5 days, so it's doing good money. And I'd heard those rumors as well. I'd heard, on one hand, Fuqua said, this is it. Unless Denzel wants to come back and do another one, then who am I to turn down Denzel and who are any of us? But yeah, I'd also heard that he would be interested in a prequel with the de-age tech, which is a big no-no because you cannot maintain that level of de-aging for a 2-hour film or an hour and 40 minutes. You just can't. The budget would be astronomical for a film like this. And or having Michael B. Jordan or David Washington in the role, obviously Denzel's son, John David Washington. I mean, that could be interesting, but, you know, regardless of my thoughts on this film, I'm still not interested in a prequel to it. It's it comes down to, I'm sure that Fuqua and the writer of this, who's now Richard Wenk, who's again written all 3 films, I'm sure they like being in this world. I'm sure they'd love to come up with more stories, but you know, it's box office studio, it's demand. Can they be putting their resources better now? That is the question that comes up. Would it be worth just writing prequel books that tie into the novels? And if people really want to read them, then they can do. I don't know. But yeah, they do want to continue this, but it seems to weigh of any mildly successful action franchise in the wake of John Wick. And it's, I mean, to be fair, I mean, action franchises for decades have been ongoing sagas. I mean, look at Rocky and all those, Rambo and all these other things. You're into like your 5th, 6th, 7th installment. And then you've got the B movies, which go into their teens. So it's nothing new. But the Equalizer 3, then, John, is it worthy of another film? And like you say, does it actually wrap things up at all? What I will say up top is this film is better than the second one. I will comfortably say now this film is better than the second one, which was, like I said, I really didn't like it. I think the film, it doesn't bypass that second one, but it nods a bit more to the first one, I think, anyway. And it's fine, John. It's fine. It's tolerable. I didn't hate the film. I didn't dislike it. I did get a bit bored watching it because if you're going expecting a straight up action film, like a full throttle action film, like we've seen recently with the John Wick films and with things like Nobody and stuff in recent years, you're not going to get that. That's not what this film is. Surprisingly, it kicks off with a bang. It starts off like it throws you right into this middle of his set piece. And then for an hour film, that's an hour and 45 minutes. I want to say for at least half of that, maybe more. It is the pacing slows down. We spend more time with Richard McCall. He, like we said, like the synopsis said, he's now in Italy. something happens at the beginning of the film, and he's like, you know what, I've had enough of this. Things happen, and he contemplates things, and in the end, he goes across the water and lives in this new town, this small town. And whilst he is there, he kind of grows fond of the town and the townsfolk. And we get a lot of time just with Robert McCall, you know, walking around very slowly, talking to the townsfolk of all ages and getting to know them. It takes its time. And something I've been critical of films like this for is that you go gung-ho with the action, the spectacle, and the cool set pieces, but you don't give us time with the characters. The problem here is they gave us time with the characters, and I just didn't really buy it. I wasn't emotionally invested in any of them. So I was kind of thinking, hurry up, come on. But then when you get to the second half, then it goes a bit balls to the wall. And this film is very violent. This is much more violent, I think, anyway, from what I can remember. It's more violent than the other two films. And Fuqua doesn't hold back. There is a kind of vibe of horror through this, in the way that McCall is presented. Like he stalks people in the dark and in shadows, and he's just there. He's like a slasher. And his
freaking Batman.
Batman, yes. And his methods of killing are... I mean, my man, there's nothing my man won't use to kill you. And there's nowhere he won't shoot you as well, which is hilarious. But it is violent, it's gorier than I thought it was going to be. You know, the killings are brutal, and you linger on them, you see them. You don't really cut away. I mean, it's broken bones and lots of blood. It's more heavier than I thought it was going to be in that section. But the problem is, the villains aren't exciting. What they do is despicable, and like some of the things that they do isn't good. But
yeah,
the actual villains themselves, I'm not bothered by what they're doing. Do I want them to meet their end? Of course I do. And Robert McCall, Denzel, was more than happily to relish giving it to them. But yeah, I wasn't bothered by them. Of course the dialogue's awful. We don't need me telling me that. Dialogue's terrible. Denzel was always so watchable. I love Denzel. I don't know anyone who doesn't. Denzel was just so charming. Yeah. Effortlessly watchable. He elevates these films more than they should have any right to. Though you could argue that maybe he's kind of coasting a little bit in this one. I don't know, but I thought he's very watchable. I thought he's very good in it. And the film, I think, does get right is, from a technical side of it, it looks very, very good. I mean, when Robert Richardson, who is a Oscar-winning cinematographer, When Fuqua said to him, here's a camera, here is southern Italy, here's the Amalfi Coast, here's Naples and here's Rome, try not to make it look bad. And he was like, you know what, I'm going to make it look incredible. And he really, really did. It's like, the film looks great. There's lots of wide shots and lots of panoramic shots being used. You really get the scope and the beauty of this part of the world. And when Robert McCall is hanging out in the town, it looks great. And I believe Fuqua said that a lot of the people on set actually live in the town, so it was a very kind of personal, intimate vibe, which he said was pretty cool with filming, which is why Denzel was such a laid-back vibe with them, because they just live there and he's just chilling with them. So it looks great. Some of the action is good. Don't get me wrong, it's not like the action's boring or not great. Like, some of the action, some of the killing, if I could say, be so bold, they're well done. It's, you know, they're interesting to watch and satisfying at times. But JB, yeah, like, this story didn't bother me. Like and by the time I got to the end, this kind of eye rolling bit at the end, I was like, guys, come on, I've no time for this. That kind of lost me a little bit. It wasn't a film that ever really sucked me in. I thought it's fine. I thought it looked good. Denzel is wonderful as ever, even if maybe he isn't given his entire tea here. There's a little bit less cliche here in terms of the whole stopwatch thing, which the franchise is known for. But
yeah,
it's a lot bloodier, and it's not quite the kill fest that I thought it would be. It is more about the characters, but don't get me wrong, it is probably the most brutal of all three of them. But it's a film, it's talking about past trauma, where it's talking about justice and how Robert McCall can find the balance here. And it's also a man who's kind of thinking, you know what, I'm done with this life. He doesn't find violence, doesn't want it to define him, or he wants to be done with this world, and he realizes that. So there's a bit of reflection going on as well. But you know, tell that to him when he's absolutely mutilating people. But although it's okay, JB, I thought this was going to be awful. I thought it was going to be like excruciating. It wasn't. Thankfully, it's only an hour and 40 something minutes and not 2.5. That worked in its favor, even if it was very slow, very methodically paced, shall we say. But didn't dislike it, JB. Middle of the road for me, straight down to kind of 2.5 out of 5, maybe. But I did expect worse, so I was surprised in that sense. But I'm interested now, JB, because I have no idea what you thought about this film. Please tell me. I mean,
a lot of the same thoughts that you had. Like, there are storylines in this that feel so unnecessary by the end of them. Like, while they're happening, they're kind of compelling. Maybe like those things a little more. I was kind of intrigued. I'm like, oh, why is Dakota Fanning here? Why did he make this phone call? Why is he in Italy? Which is the question that he starts off with, right? Like, that's, why are you here? Like, how did you find me?
Don't need to know. That's why.
Yeah. And all of those things do not culminate to feeling like they ever matter. And we won't say what they, how they culminate or what they are, but I feel like none of the story elements or the story threads, some of which we spend a lot of time with, don't really pay off in any kind of significant way that felt satisfying. And I didn't feel disconnected at first, but over time I'm like, well, that seems dumb. Or like, there's a part where Dakota Fanning's character says something and I'm like, first of all, why is that guy here right now? Because earlier he was somewhere in another part of the country. I don't know how he could be here that fast. And then like, second, like she says like, oh, I did this. I'm like, no, you didn't though. You didn't do that. Like you outright didn't do the thing you just said you did at all. Like, you don't deserve any accolades or credit. Like, nothing that you've done actually has any impact on anything we've seen. And that kind of is where the movie really loses me the most. Mm-hmm. I was surprised that we got this kind of slow burn character study with this film, but
I appreciate
in a bad
that,
way.
Even if it didn't work fully for me.
And that's, I feel like if you're gonna do that, you really got to sell the story. And I think that's where the movie really crashes and burns, is that it sets up potential story. We have all these characters, all these intimate kind of situations. The cafe owner, she immediately like denies his tea and gives him a cappuccino, but then later she gives him the tea and there's no real explanation to why her attitude changed. And then over time we see them start to have a bit of a relationship, but it's still like, it's like, well, that first thing made no sense still, like, cause he gets tea every other time. And then I couldn't remember if he was OCD in the other movies or not. Cause he's like setting down napkins and he's like very particular and he has his own spoon. And I'm like, was that a thing? And I just forgot, which is definitely possible. 100% possible that I just forgot. But
don't remember. I know he was very kind of, you know, he had his stopwatch and it was all a lot of that going on. And
he's,
he did
very
say
methodical.
It was a time related quote in this, which I think is in the trailer anyway. But I don't remember his OCD though. Probably was.
I mean, yeah, it probably was, to be fair. It's one of those quirky character things. Probably he says here that he's neat, but like the having his own spoon is like, no. I've seen As Good As It Gets. And granted, that's not an accurate portrayal of OCD in most cases, but nevertheless, it's a very Hollywood version of that disorder. So, but I did like the performances. I'm loving that this movie's getting memed. I don't know if you've been seeing it, but like him dunking the teabag and saying, "I don't want to ruin the surprise," is like a meme.
I haven't seen those memes.
And I was baffled. I'm like, who else saw this movie enough to, because like the audience for this is an older crowd.
100%.
So they don't seem like they'd be making the memes. So I'm like, what is happening? And then I think it's got one of the other moments. I'm not going to remember which one now, but I was like, it's weird that these are getting made. It's probably, honestly, it's probably the studio making them, because they're like, please see our movie, young people. But
Morbius all over again.
Like, and there's some weird choices. The biker gang that is apparently part of like this new edgier version of the mafia, their score is ridiculous. Like, it is so intense. Like, they're just like, it's video of them riding through the city and it's just like the most intense score ever. And I'm like, calm down, composer. It was a lot there in a way that kind of made me laugh, which there's a few moments that I think they go way too extreme where it doesn't feel like it's the same movie that I remember the other ones being. But then I remember there was a hurricane in the second one. So maybe I'm just misreading what this movie is supposed to be. It does have a comic booky kind of vibe to it. It's very grounded in reality. The kills are brutal in this. But also, like, they set up silly things, and I do think the villain gets real cartoony towards the end of it. He's always extreme, but, like, the way he reacts to stuff in the third act is, like, over the top and goofy to me. Not at all the menacing figure that he paints earlier in the film. And, like, again, there's so many story threads that I feel like don't really get fleshed out enough to matter. But it's Denzel, man. It's still watchable, and that's the thing. Because, like you said, I definitely went into this thinking, oh, God, this is going to be absolute trash. Especially because the second one, I was into the second one for, like, the first half. And then by the end, I was like, please freaking end this movie. I am so done with this. Where this one, I was like, I'm done with this, but I'm not mad. I'm just like, you could have ended this better. Like, we've got some good setup here. You had some interesting, compelling elements. The things that come back at the end are real not good. A lot of it does feel stitched at, like, what's that answer? Oh, here's our solution. But yeah, overall, it's much more watchable than I had anticipated. And again, Denzel is being Denzel, and I like him. So,
yeah, on the note of it being for an older audience, it absolutely is. I'm really interested to see what they think about the portrayal of Denzel, because he has, you know, of McCall, because he has changed over time. Now, from in The Equalizer, he was, you know, he's a lot calmer, and now he's just rampaging through blood and guts. It is a change in the character, like, quite viciously, don't excuse the pun, but I do wonder what the people who kind of grown up with these films, if you could say so, think about that, because it does feel at times like a bit of a different character, and you do often think sometimes, I did anyway, like, this is a good guy, and he's absolutely just mutilating people. It's kind of making you have split loyalties. I didn't at all think I wanted the mafia to win, but like, this guy is an absolute nutcase. Yeah. But I need to see the memes, though. I need to see those, John.
Yeah, I'll have to try to find a couple. Side note, without getting into specifics, but you mentioned the mafia, but they definitely reference some major mafia movies from the past in a few sequences that I'll talk about in spoilers if we are doing spoilers.
We probably should do, just so we can mention at least a bit of the gore. But if you know that, spoiler minisodes, they're about 10 minutes, and we usually blast through the stuff we couldn't speak about now on a show like this, which is non-spoiler. But it seems like we both were pleasantly satisfied with the fact that it wasn't awful, rather than the film actually being particularly good. But question, and JB, to wrap it up from my side, is if somebody came up to you and said, John, I've got $10, I wish I got you into the cinema, I want to go and see The Equalizer 3. It's the only film I want to see. Would you recommend it? What are you saying? Would you recommend this to somebody out there who likes action films, or just wants to go and check out a film? Ooh, that's
I would definitely give a very big caveat if they are expecting it to feel like a John Wick movie, because while the action is visceral, it is what, like, there's like three sequences max. A few other little things, but there's like three main action sequences, which are not bad.
No.
But they're infrequent by comparison to the very long character study elements of the film. So I would say, like, it's not going to be action packed from wall to wall, but the action scenes, I think, are good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think give a caveat.
Okay. I think Robert Richardson, he frames Washington very well in those scenes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, okay. Yes. I mean, I'm on the fence whether or not, I mean, if it's only one of the only films out this week, so yeah, go check it out. But you may not be as blown away as you thought you would be going into it. Still, it's better than most of Liam Neeson's recent action flicks. So
yeah,
that is our non-spoiler review of The Equalizer 3. We'll be giving a few thoughts in a couple of days with our spoilers. So let's move on then, JB, to our next scheduled headline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
section. I'm getting myself in a tizzy there. Our next section, which we call Chuffed Headlines. Here, John and myself, we take a movie or pop culture news headline that caught our attention for any reason, and we share it with each other and the world. John, what have you gone for this week?
So I went kind of following up from last week, and I stole it from you, I assume, is that Exorcist Believer, which was set to come out on, what, October 13th?
Yes,
has moved up a week.
Friday the 13th, yep.
Because it was afraid of the eras. If you haven't heard, folks,
Swift exit.
Taylor Swift's Eras Tour is going to have a cinematic release. A concert movie getting a cinematic release does not happen nearly often enough, in my opinion, because often they're pretty awesome, and I'd love to see them on a big screen. And especially, I didn't get to go to the Eras Tour, so I'm pretty hyped to see this. But it's pretty wild to see a big movie push their date up because of this. Like, they're intimidated by the box office potential numbers being, you know, ruined, and people were shocked when it was announced, and then it was even more shocking when they reacted and moved it forward, which I guess was their original release date, and then they had pushed it back at some point. From my understanding, I could be misreading something, but I thought it was pretty funny, because I don't know how much of a crossover there is, but you know, we get to see Believer a week early now, I guess, is the way to look at it. What do you think, Matt?
Well, the power of Christ clearly compelled them. Pazuzu just thought, you know what, I don't fancy that fight. I don't. Taylor can win that one. See, I think I'm one of the only people in the world who hasn't been swept up in the swiftiness of all. Nothing against Taylor Swift. I think she's a force for good, other than the whole climate change and flying around the world in private jets, flying around the country and all that. But we'll leave that for another show. But as far as I'm aware, she's a good person, so good on you. I'm just not the biggest fan of the music. My daughter seems to quite like her, though, so win-win. But I'm not stupid. I'm aware of the pull that Swift has, and, of course, her rabid fans, the Swifties. And there will be a clamour to see this, and it will be because of what you've just said, JB. You haven't been able to see it. I know people in my life who have tried to get tickets to this tour in the UK or Europe, and America, and just could not. They had phones, tablets, laptops, desktop, everything on to try and get damn tickets, and no way, they just couldn't get them. These things went like, well, what's rarer than gold dust? They went quicker than that. So there'll be people who want to go to this to at least feel like they've been part of the experience. And I was initially worried because when JB texted me this, I thought, oh Christ, you've got the sequel or lega sequel to one of the biggest films of all time in terms of box office and legacy and impact, and they're moving it. What does that say about the quality of the film? You know, I'd want to be able to think that they could, that Universal and Blumhouse could look at it and think, no, we're confident enough in what we have that we don't care. This is our week, and we're gonna rule the week. We've possessed it. But clearly, they've thought that our best chance of making the most money is to move it and not get overshadowed by what is essentially a pre-recorded gig. But fine, we get to see it a week earlier, JB. So, but you know, it's business at the end of the day. It's business. Can they make more money by moving it a week earlier? More than likely, yes. Therefore, they're going to do it. And in this climate where studios are hemorrhaging money because they can't pay their workers and staff properly, they need to recoup as much as possible. And it also could be that the film wasn't great. Though that said, JB, I don't know if you saw the second trailer, which came out this week. It came out of nowhere, really, because I was at work and I'd logged on to social media in my lunch break at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I saw there was a new trailer. So I didn't watch it. I watched it when I got home on the big screen. But it sort of came out of nowhere. And the film comes out in a month's time now. I don't know if you saw, I watched it though, JB, and I thought the second trailer was actually pretty good. As somebody who was a little bit anxious after the first one, because it looked a bit vanilla, a bit generic, this one looks a little bit better now. This one's got me a little bit more excited. They're showing a bit more of the stuff I want to see, even though they've still got some of the tropey things. You've still got the bit pea soup in there, which I was kind of hoping they wouldn't do that, but you see it very briefly. If you blink and you miss it. I got to hear the demon's voice, or at least one of them, and I thought, okay, that sounds much better than I thought it was. I thought, is this going to be one of those kind of computerized ones? But no, one of them sounds quite good, actually. Ellen Burstyn, she's in it. I hope she makes it through, because I love Ellen Burstyn. I hope they don't just bring her back for a cheap kind of knockoff. And the vibe and the intensity just felt a bit better. It does, of course, it's not ever going to top the original. Not many Lego sequels will do. But the second trailer was a lot more reassuring to me that this could at least be a good horror film or a good exorcism film, which ties into The Exorcist. We'll see, though. It could end up being absolute garbage, JB. And I think if you ask me now to put a dollar on which one I think is going to fall on, I still think it's going to be the thumbs down in terms of... overall, wasn't going to be any good, but the second trailer has given me a lot of hope. I actually thought it was very good. Did you see the second trailer at all, JB? Did The Power of Christ compare you?
I saw your reaction to it, and that was, I saw like a bit of the clip, but I think I was still at work when I was looking at it, so I couldn't like really watch it. I've not followed up with it yet, but you know, I might seek it out. I sometimes I don't know if the second trailer is what I just saw in theaters. Like when I saw Equalizer 3, there was the Exorcist trailer, and I wasn't sure if that was the new one or if that was the first one. So like I'm always uncertain, because a lot of times they'll release it on YouTube after they release it on the big screens. So I hadn't followed up.
Yesterday, though, I think yesterday was when it dropped everywhere, I think, and including in theaters.
So then it doesn't seem like it. So I'll have to seek it out. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not as excited in general. David is David Gordon Green, right?
Uh-huh. Oh, that's the part that scares me more than the film. Yes.
Yeah. After Halloween Ends and Kills, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I don't trust anything you do anymore. So
it's funny because Halloween Ends, you know, what a risk to do that. It's just a shame. It is bloody awful, which is the shame, because it could have just been Laurie versus Michael, which is what people wanted, but they thought, oh, let's do something different. Let's try and be a bit more elevated of what we do. It was just not very good, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But
I'm all for, like, you know, changing. I don't know. I feel like if you set it up, especially when you do three movies,
God, yes,
like you shouldn't throw a complete 180 curveball in the third film. And especially if it's not going to do something incredible, you know, like, and it wasn't to me. But
good point. Well, the trailer feels like a Gordon Green film, in the sense that I like the way his films look generally. I think he's, you know, good visual filmmaker.
Yeah,
so, so they don't look bad, but I mean, you're not going to go into, I don't think you're going to come out of him being like, god damn, I think I've just seen the, I've just had an epiphany of the second coming or anything like that. I think compare it to the first trailer, I was like, okay, well, this is more like it. This is what they should have released in the first one to get people a little bit more excited, because I think the first one had some, that the church scene was daft and a couple of other things. Like, I don't need that kind of crap. The second one feels a little bit tighter and a bit more focused, but you might watch it still, JB, and think, yeah, no, it doesn't look great, but I think it was better.
Well, I have to check it out. What was your headline this week, since I stole the one you would have had?
Yeah, I know you're obsessed. My one is, you know, I didn't really have one this week. I mean, one of the ones I was going to say was the whole RT scanner, which dropped today. But then I thought, you know, it for me, as far as I'm concerned, it's much of a nothing story. So I stuck with the one I went for originally, which is actually a bit of fun. But I wanted to get your thoughts on it, JB. I'm going to blast through this I don't want to be in too long on it. But it's from the guys at Screen Rant by Cathal Gunning. It was published 9 hours ago, apparently. John, they said, they've got 8 Top Gun details that prove Maverick is actually dead in the 2022 sequel. John, he's gone. He's dead. One Top Gun Maverick fan theory claims Tom Cruise's anti-hero was dead for most of the sequel, and they say there's a surprising amount of evidence to back it. Firstly, John, when you watched Top Gun Maverick, did you at any point think, this guy's dead?
No.
Yeah, exactly. No, right.
I used to like stuff like this, and now I find it just ridiculous. It's like, come on, like, we gotta stop.
It's so new. It's horribly. Well, Screen Rant, they are very, very guilty of this. We know that on this show.
It, to me, it's just like, let the movie be the movie. If the movie wanted us to think the character was dead, they would have done something in the film to really make that a thing. Like, it's not like at the end of the film, there's like a it cuts back to the beginning of the movie and you see him, you know, he never actually, well, I'm guessing it's that the first plane he's in blows up, and that the claim is that he never parachutes in.
Yes. So the first part is that in the beginning, he's in that Mach 10 plane. They're doing a test flight.
Yeah.
And they're saying that, they say, well, look, it's a pretty fair guess that ejecting at Mach 10 is basically a death sentence. They do also say, well, maybe he had a special like escape pod, but they're saying the theory begins that when he ejected, he dies, because it probably would absolutely eviscerate you. But and then they say he looked a little bit dusty after his landing. He nurses no broken bones. This is the first clue to his potential fate. And then again, I'll blast through these. And the next one is, they're saying he's when he's speaking to Iceman in that beautifully emotional scene with Val Kilmer, and Iceman says to Maverick, "Look, you just got to let go of the guilt and trauma that carries you with him." The theory says that Iceman's saying, "Look, let go of all your guilt, and you can come to the afterlife." Part six, they're talking about Rooster being so similar to Goose that it's actually Tom Cruise projecting his life in these new students, which is again a bit of a stretch. The next one, the apparently explains the mission. Maverick is the only one who can fly the mission, even though he's only hired to teach the recruits to fly, and it never tells you what mission, what country the mission takes place in, or what war it's a part of. And also, they're like, they say that because of his illegal test run, he should have been kicked out, but nope, he wasn't kicked out. You know, he was, you know, the fantasy in his mind was keeping us going. The next one is Penny, who's played by Jennifer Connelly. They said the love interest there, it feels really pure and very, very silky, and it feels more like a dying man's dream than a fully rounded human. Three more. The Hangman and Rooster rivalry is strikingly similar to the dynamic between Maverick and Iceman. This could be because the character only exists in Maverick's mind, and the dynamic is built on his memories of him and Iceman. Yep, second one. Now we're pivoting. They're saying, actually, do you know what? The dying dream may have started later. It may have actually been when he apparently sacrifices himself to save Rooster. They're saying that that's what happens, because after that, when they crash in the snow and the Tomcat managed to evade fifth generation fighters, is so unbelievable to be, it can't be true, that it's all part of his fantasy. And then the final one, this is ridiculous. The final theory is Maverick might not have died in Top Gun, Maverick's fan theory. Instead, he was just in a coma. And it turns out that in Top Gun 3 would be none of Top Gun Maverick actually happened, because he dreamt it all up. It was a Patrick Duffy in the shower moment, or whatever it is, Dallas in the shower moment. Basically, it's a load of old rubbish. But I wanted to run it past you, JB, to see any of those things you're hearing there for a film which grossed well over $1.5 billion. Was it all rubbish? Was it all a figment of Maverick's dying dream?
None of that convinces me whatsoever. That's not in the text of the film. It's, and yeah, they're reaching through it, but man, it's real bad.
If they dropped Top Gun 3 and said, and you saw Maverick waking up from a coma and saying, "I've been out for the last 5 years, what happened?" And it turns out that none of the events of Maverick happened, what would your reaction in the theatre be? Obviously, this is all hypothetical, just a bit of fun, but if it was all a dream?
I mean, I would be so angry, I think. Like, the idea of pulling, it's not a twist to pull the rug out from under people. We've obviously seen things retcon. I don't know that, like, why would you retcon Maverick? Like, it wouldn't make any sense. Man, I can't imagine a world where that happens. Like, especially not with Maverick doing what it did. Like, yeah, because I mean, studios are dumb. They've proven that.
Yeah.
But like, they can't be that dumb where they're like, oh, you know what would make everyone real happy and pay money to see the third one? What if we pretended the second one that they loved wasn't real? Like, no way. That's just
the best picture nominated film as well. And all the other things didn't happen. Yeah, of course it would never happen, but it's sometimes fun to entertain the ludicrous on this show. And none of that. Yeah. I mean, it's fun. It's a fun conspiracy theory that if you do believe in it, that's cool. Actually, if you do, let us know why, and if there's any other theories like that that you relate to. But sometimes it can be fun, and there are some, I can't name any off the top of my head, but there are some of these kind of fan theories which you look at and think, oh, actually, that's not bad. And sometimes even the director will wade in and think, not a bad idea, actually. This isn't one of them.
There are a lot of Pixar ones that I feel like are grounded in some fun. But I also like, no, you know what? The only ones that like I really, you can't deny are like this. The Cars universe doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you really start to analyze like a lot of it. So those, I guess, make more sense. But it's even a lot of people really nitpicked Elemental for similar reasons. Like the universe that we are seeing is illogical. But it's like, yeah, but it's metaphorical. It's not supposed to be logical. Yeah. Like, it's being used to make a point. It's being used to be pretty and fun for the kids while also making a very powerful emotional connection to the adults. Like, that's why Elemental. It doesn't need to be that. And I can't argue for that. Like, it could be anything else almost, and it would probably make more sense in that way. But it's pretty, and it's got a good story, and they just made stuff to make it work, even if it literally, if it makes fun of itself. You know, there's scenes where like the characters kind of she walks through the fence, like, why do they even put this up? Fair point. It's a valid question, and it's the movie making fun of its own bad logic. But like, those aren't conspiracy theories. Like, the films have issues within that reality, and are trying to make sense of our reality to its reality. There's an issue. This is just like, you know, it's Descartes. I know that I exist because I am aware that I'm thinking. Like, it's that mindset. It's like, well, I know that this isn't real because this. It's like, yeah, but those things aren't, you're projecting something onto what's there in an effort to make it different. And it's not a bad thought experiment. The problem is not everyone will take it as a thought experiment. Some people will take it as, now, oh, see, Maverick didn't happen. It's like, no, that's not true. Like, you can, you can give me a bunch of reasons why you feel like it's not true, but why would they do that? Like, what would be the point of that then? Like, just let it be the movie that it is.
It's rubbish. The story actually goes on to say, quite funnily, that where in that final one, I will move on, but it says Top Gun 3 could reveal Maverick imagined the ending while in a coma, but still awoke and recovered. Interestingly, to me anyway, this was how director Cary Fukunaga originally wanted to retcon the ending of Spectre in No Time to Die. So original Cary Fukunaga, because he was attached to No Time to Die for the longest time, was going to retcon the end of Spectre and basically be like, you know, James Bond was in a coma, none of that happened. That would have been ballsy as hell. I mean, people say the end of No Time to Die was ballsy. So basically, essentially, retcon a massive film like Spectre, whether it's any good or not, it doesn't matter. It was a big film. To basically say, yeah, the ending was rubbish, I didn't like it, I'm changing it completely, would have been very, very ballsy. The story says that actually if he was in a coma, it would have allowed Top Gun 3 to take on a more realistic tone than its predecessor. Right, that's enough screen rant for the day. It's enough internet for the day, I think. Cathal Gunning, I respect you, but close your laptop down after that, please. Enough is enough. So let's move on then, JB, before we fall down a rabbit hole of these bloody awful theories. And let's move on to media consumption, where we talk about the consumpted media we have been enjoying over the last week since the last episode. So that is movies, TV, video games, music, podcasts, which aren't ours. Anything that we've used to pass the time. JB, you've always got a pretty cool selection. What have you been checking out?
Well, I had a lot to say, but then I realized I was actually in a coma and I didn't see any of this stuff. So
it's 2017. We've just started the show.
We just met. I messaged you on Twitter and you responded. What do you mean it's called X? As always, I've listened to the episodes of Blank Check Podcast. They just finished the Park Chan-wook series with Decision to Leave. They had the actress who plays She-Hulk, Tatiana
Maslany.
Yes, on the episode, which was great. She's really fun. She seems so down to earth, which is kind of the vibe I had with her on She-Hulk as well. But she's won an Emmy, I think, for Orphan Black. Like, she's in a bunch of stuff, but. And they finished their series on the Oceans films on the Patreon with Oceans 8, which, dude, I had forgot. You saw Oceans 8, right?
Yes.
Do you remember how it ends? Because I forgot how it ends.
Yes and no, I do not remember.
Your boy, James Corden, shows up as the detective who unravels the mystery and, like, I completely forgot he was in that movie until the episode. Yeah, I'm like, wow, what a like complete, because I'm like, no, that movie's good, and the guys are like, it's good until the end. I'm like, what happens at the end? I could not, for the life, like, I know they're going to reveal the heist, because that's the Ocean's formula, right? Like, we think we know what's happening, and then there's a big reveal of all the things we didn't know. But James Corden is our guide through that process, and I was like, oh man, I really forgot about that. But I'm really excited. As much as I enjoyed the Park Chan-wook series, they're doing David Fincher next.
Oh.
And it's the first time, I think, as an active listener, because I did go back and listen to episodes because I joined a few years into the show. I think as the episodes are coming out, I think this is the first time where I've seen the entire filmography of the filmmaker. So, like, I have to do no homework in order to listen to the episodes for the first time in a while. Like, when they did John Carpenter last year, the year before, I had to watch a ton of movies. Even though I'd seen, like, the biggest Carpenter films, I had not seen many of the middling ones, or I had not seen them in a long time. And so I did a lot of homework. Park Chan-wook, I had a fight to see like two of his, cause they were never released in America. And you know, and I don't mind that. I like to keep up, but this is like, I'm like, do I just rewatch them? Cause I haven't seen the game.
Some
since it
good
came
rewatches
out.
There though, isn't there? To be fair, there's not bad films to rewatch.
Oh no, not at all. I'm very hyped, cause I am a huge Fincher directing fan. I'm currently not thrilled with some of the comments he made about the strike, but, I've enjoyed. Yeah, it's one of those things where he's very Fincher about it. You know, it's this kind of like stoic from a distance perspective of the strike, and it's like, don't say things like that.
Tone deaf.
Yeah, but so that's the podcast. Movies. I finally got like kind of motivated to watch some stuff. I caught on Hulu How to Blow Up a Pipeline, which is from this year.
How is this? Because somebody messaged me, my buddy messaged me and said, have you watched it? And I said, no.
It's so good. It's real good.
Oh, it's on Netflix over here, I think.
Yeah, it's I like the structure of it a lot. It's real cool. Like I liked it a lot.
What's it about? Sorry, just for those who may not have heard of it.
It's a like a domestic terrorist group, essentially, targeting a pipeline in Texas. And domestic terrorists being the term that's going to be labeled to them. They don't think of themselves as that at first, but they are aware, like they're attempting to blow up an oil pipeline, to stop the drilling. Because they're protesters essentially, like but they're tired of being passive. I wouldn't inherently call it a heist movie, but there is like heist elements because you kind of like, who's the team, what are their roles on the team, and then this is, instead of stealing something, they're blowing something up. And you know, what are their intentions behind that? What are they trying to do and preserve? And then you slowly get to learn who each member is and what their stakes are in the thing. It's really well done. It's tense. Man, it's really well performed. I think Sasha Lane is like the biggest name in it, which she's not the main character. It's very much an ensemble film. I feel like there's one other person who is like known, but I can't think of who it is right now. But yeah, I did like it a lot. Definitely recommend you check it out. I finally watched WALL-E.
Oh.
And I technically had watched it before, but I watched it while playing a video game on a computer, so I didn't watch it. And it's a silent film, really. And at its heart, it's a silent film. And you have to watch it. And man, I loved this movie so much this time because I watched it. And to be fair, I don't know if I would have appreciated it when I watched it the first time where I was mentally. This movie now, with my many years of investing in film and old film and silent film, especially because of Blank Check, I watched all of Buster Keaton's stuff, including his shorts, or at least 20 of his shorts. I think there's more than that, but I watched 20 of them, where I now have a very strong appreciation of silent comedy, especially. And I love rom-coms, and I've really grown up to appreciate musicals. So all of those little elements in the film, I also was not aware of some of the voice casts, like Jeff Garland being like the captain, didn't put that together. I know him through podcasts and stuff. He's also on he's in a bunch of stuff. I mean, the dude does work, but he's not usually a lead. So he's like the lead human. I mean, obviously WALL-E and Eva are the leads, but, the captain is like the human. I enjoyed the movie so much. It immediately is now in my. It's technically number five. I put the four Toy Story films above all.
Ooh, four.
I love all four. I love all four. I don't know what anyone's problem is with four. I love Forky. The whole dad vibe of Woody in that film. Yeah, I love four. Because I also was. I'm not thrilled they're making five. I wasn't thrilled that they made four. Four won me over. I don't know if five can do it, but the rumors right now is that Andy and his family, because now he's a grown up and has kids, is going to play a factor. And I'm like, you jerks. I'm so into that idea. Let's do it.
There are ways that it could be very bad, though. But
I know
we said that about four. We on this show, this show, I remember saying it, and I remember you insinuating as well that Toy Story 4 felt a little bit like Disney and Pixar were saying, make some money off this. It's a film that doesn't need to be made. It's a cash grab. I use those words. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I did. And then I watched the film and was more than happy to eat every single word I'd said because I much enjoyed Toy Story 4. Like you, the fifth one, though, is it a bridge too far? I'm not going to listen. Yeah. I'm not going to count those guys out because they've given us four fabulous films. But man, how many films can say they've got five incredibly good films in a row? Any series?
Yeah, so Wally is right now number five. It might fluctuate because I love a lot of Pixar. I am very much a Pixar. I'm one of the only people who didn't hate Lightyear. I have lessons on Lightyear over time, but you know, but yeah, so I watched that, loved it. I'm going to move these out of order because I watched Wall-E. I noticed Hello Dolly, which I'd never seen, was on Disney Plus also. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to watch this iconic musical that I know very little about.
Yep.
Matt, have you seen it?
I have seen it, yes.
I freaking love Hello Dolly. Like, Barbra Streisand is amazing in that movie. It's so much fun. I love Walter Matthau. He can't sing.
No, oh, good God, no.
No, like, they kind of work. He only gets one song, if I remember correctly, and then he kind of, like, just throws out some phrases in another song. But I love Matthau anyways. But Streisand... I don't know if I've liked her in other stuff, but I love her in Hello Dolly. Like, she is incredible in that movie. And I almost didn't watch it. I was like, I don't know if I'm in the mood for that kind of like a period musical. It was 100% in the mood for it. It pulled me in so fast. I loved every second. The young couple, the guys that work for him and the two women that run the hat store. I loved their story so much. I was completely engrossed in all of that. Hello Dolly. Wow. Did not expect to be like should have known. But man, that one really clicked for me. I do love musicals so much more than I used to.
Sneaks up on you like that as well. When you're like, wow, yeah. This is great.
Especially cause I almost didn't. I almost was like, no, I don't know. I'm like, no, I'm just going to jump in. I'm going to watch it. And then I was like, I'll just have it on in the background. And like 20 minutes in, I had like my phone down. I was just like, this is so much fun.
I mean,
and I've been having to watch movies, in parts cause like stuff keeps coming up. And I managed to time that one like perfectly to what I assume there had to have been an intermission, but like when it basically transitions from day to night, there's like, it's the midpoint of the film. It was like perfect pause. I'm like, I'm gonna pause right here, go do what I gotta do, come back and I finish it. Yeah. Fantastic. Prepping for My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3, I watched number 2. I didn't love 2. I didn't hate it. At first I hated it. I think I just watched 1 this year. If it's not this year, I watched it last year for the first
time. Crap, I remember. Yeah, I remember now.
Yeah, so I really liked 1. I don't love the husband. Like, he is such a wet blanket. Like, any other actor, I think, would be so much more compelling than that guy. Like, and I feel like 2 does a bad job of trying to reset the status quo of the first film, where, like, I forget the main character's name, but she's, like, back to not having confidence and back to, you know, like, it's like, you don't have to do that. Like, we could develop from where she left off instead of like resetting it. And they don't fully, I don't know. It by the end, I was like, all right, fine. It's still enjoyable because you still like the people. It's hard not to. They're charming and it's fun.
It's been 7 years, JP. I don't believe the second film was particularly well received. I know it did well at the box office, but it's been 7 years. Why are they doing the third one?
Well, the dad's dead based on the trailer for the third one. So they're going to Greece.
It happens, woman.
And it's so they can go to Greece. It's the same reason why I think Equalizer 3 happens, because Equalizer 3 is in Italy for no reason.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. They wanted a holiday.
They wanted a holiday. Which, hey, you know what? If I can convince work to pay me to go somewhere I want to go, I'm going to do that.
You're damn right.
But lastly, dude, I have been wanting to watch Psycho 2 and Psycho 3.
Oh, exciting. Yes, go.
For some time, and I haven't had the drive to buy them. But it was maybe a year ago I found out that 2 was actually considered to be a good sequel, which I'd always written off because it's not Hitchcock, right? So I'm just like, no way.
No.
And all of a sudden, the other day, I get a notification at night from Letterboxd of when they add movies to state like that I have on my watch list to streaming services that I have.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's like, hey, Psycho 2 is on Peacock. I'm like, oh, snap. It's time. I'm going to finally see Psycho 2. So when I'm looking for it on Peacock, it also says 3. I'm like, oh, maybe I should watch both. So 2 has tons of praise. 3 is very much not. But then a lot of the critics that I follow on Letterboxd had a lot of love for 3. And I'm looking at 3. And 3 is directed by, do you know who?
I do not.
Anthony Perkins directs 3.
Oh, goddamn. Yeah, yeah. Mr. Norman Bates himself.
Mr. Norman Bates himself. So I'm like, well, I have to watch it. Like, the people on here are like kind of like, again, it has a low score. I think it's like a 2.4 or something on Letterboxd. But the critics that I'm friends with on Letterboxd all had these really like 4 stars, 5 stars. And I'm like, maybe it's just like my type of like schlocky horror. So 2 is great. 2, there are moments of 2 that bug me, but 2 is definitely, okay, I see why it's a good sequel. It's blew my mind that they just reused the shower scene from Psycho at the opening of the film, though. That is like the full sequence is how the movie opens, and the rest of the movie's in color. So it's like, it's so jarring that you're like, wow, you just like, you're setting yourself up for failure because you're showing one of the best edited scenes in cinema. Everything you do from here is not going to stand up to that. You're not Hitchcock, you're right? Old. But, you know, they make it work. There's obviously some very sequel-ish nods to Hitchcock where you're trying maybe too hard to be Hitchcock. But the story works. I was surprised. I didn't know Jennifer Tilly had a sister who was an actress because I've never seen The Big Chill.
Meg Tilly.
Meg, which she's the protagonist. I was very surprised to see Vera Miles reprise the role of not Marion, but the other Crane sister. I was like, wow, they actually got Mira back. Like, I knew Anthony Perkins was in all 4. I was surprised at the recasting of Vera Miles. Not recasting, but the getting her back. Especially because she hated Hitchcock during Psycho. So it was like, wow, she was willing to come back for Psycho 2 because he wasn't attached. Psycho 2, very good. Psycho 3, I have not done anything. I've not read about it. But if Perkins didn't think, I want to pull from other Hitchcock films, because it opens with a nun climbing up the stairs of a tall tower, freaking out, begging for God to forgive her, and then accidentally killing another nun by pushing her off the rail. I'm like, Vertigo much? Like, what is happening? And dude, there's this guitar player who like he's like driving, he picks up a hitchhiker, he ends up working at the hotel. I don't know. The actor's not anyone I recognize. I thought he was great. Like, he's over the top, but he worked perfectly for me. I was on 3's wavelength. Like, it's Perkins is doing a lot of Hitchcock shots. There's a lot of the birds in the back room that are exactly from the original Psycho. They also do reference the shower scene. Like, you see flashbacks of the shower scene, direct, you know, reuse of the footage. Not as blatant. It's not the whole scene this time, but like there are a lot of cross cutting between it and what's happening in the present day. But man, I don't know, dude. 3 worked for me too. I saw 4 as a kid, and it's always stuck with me. Because 4 does a lot of like back stuff, where like it's like him as a young man. You see him in the mom, like you see the actual murder of the mom in number 4.
Yes.
But I've never forgotten it. That's always been kind of my frame of reference until I started like becoming a Hitchcock aficionado, and over I've seen Psycho way too many times. But yeah, I'm very happy that I took the time to watch 2 and 3. I'd love to talk more about them if anyone has seen them and wants to talk about it, because I have so many thoughts. But have you seen them?
Yes, my friend. Yeah. I you know me, I love horror films. So as soon as I'd heard that Psycho 2, because you hear Psycho 2, and I don't know about you, but I would immediately think, Oh boy. Yeah, well, this is going to be a quick knockoff. It's kind of sequel to Cash In, which probably loosely based on. And I mean, to be fair, the film is loosely based, loosely connected, but I really liked it. I thought Circa is a really satisfying follow-up. It's a really solid and strong follow-up, actually. And the third one isn't bad as well. I agree with what you're saying. It feels like Norman Bates, that is who he is. Who plays Norman Bates? Anthony Perkins.
Anthony Perkins.
Yeah. I suppose what's his name? It feels like he is batting from the Hitchcock end, but who else? If that's your inspiration, why wouldn't you want to? And I think the third one is solid. I think the second one is a strong follow up, and I'm pretty sure Oz Perkins. I don't know if it's Anthony Perkins' son, the director. He's in one of those films as well. Who's obviously gone on to do his own, carve his own niche in cinema. But I do enjoy those films, JB. So I'm glad. I'm always interested to hear when somebody, certainly the second one, goes to watch that, because a lot of people have that the classic first film in their head, and it's, you know, it's not going to beat that. And maybe it doesn't beat the first film, but it's a very solid follow up.
Yeah, I was very happy with it. That's it for movies, but man, I'm not trying to talk for so long with consumption, but it was a busy media week. I beat Dead Space, which I've been playing on PS5.
Good.
It's such a good game, dude. Like, and I'm really bad with horror survival games because I get really stressed out and I prefer not to play them. And there were moments where I'm like, okay, time to stop playing. But I died the first time fighting the final boss, and I was like infuriated because I'm like, nope. Nope, this is not, it's too hard. I'm not gonna be able to do it. And I said that, and then I went right back in and I beat it. So like, it was one of those games where even I was stressed and unhappy with parts of it because it was so like intense, but it was such a cool story and it looks so cool. I was playing on easy, so that I'm not like, you know, I'm not good at the game, but I had fun with the game, which is what those settings are for. Those settings are for people who want to have the experience, maybe can't handle or aren't like going to sit there and like redo the thing. Definitely recommend Dead Space. And then David and I beat Dead Island 2. Remember a while back, I think it was like 2 or 3 months ago, I mentioned how he bailed on me on video games. I called him out on the podcast, and he felt compelled, and he lived up to that. He made an active effort. We got to like the end, and then we had like a 2 week hiatus where we couldn't play for whatever reason. And then this weekend we had some time. We're like, let's knock this out. And same, we almost couldn't, we died to the boss like 3 times, and then we beat him, and so much more fun multiplayer than if I had tried to solo that game. And it was it's a fun game. If you like the other Dead Island games, which I have, we had a blast playing this. It's a lot of fun. There's some replayability for sure, but I don't know that I'm 100% going to jump back into it because, Matt, I finally, after beating those two games, I jumped on Jedi Survivor.
Ooh, big game.
It is. It's a little overwhelming of a big game where I'm just like, it feels like there's so much to do. And I just want to, I don't know if I want to do all of this. I really, like, the story keeps pulling me in every time I have that thought. But then, like, I will get to a point where it's like, all right, we got to do these things. I'm like, but do I? I don't. You know, like, it's so much
logic.
Yeah. And yeah, it is. And that's like, I love the Uncharted series, but there were many maps where I'm like, why do I have to kill 80 people? Like, there'd be like 4, you know, if this were real, there'd be 4 guards and I could kill them and I could move on with my day. But instead you're going to make me sit here for an insane amount of time. And that's what this game is like. I'm like, how are their empire here? How are they here? Like, it doesn't make sense. Come on. Like, I know that you want me to have fun with the lightsaber, but I also just like there's a lot of platforming in this game, and I enjoy that a lot more, to be honest. I'm like, oh, how am I going to figure out how to move around? And the number of times I didn't realize how to activate an elevator as early in the game as I am. Cause I'll be like saying, I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? And then I'll accidentally step on the switch. I'm like, I didn't know that was a Switch game. That was not obvious to me that was a Switch. So stuff like that's irritating too, because I'm like, you need to indicate that that's what I'm supposed to do. Because no elevator in real life requires me to stand on a yellow square in the middle of it to get it to move. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
Galaxy far, far away, John.
But there's a console right next to it, Matt. That there is. If it's not there, you have to use. Why can't I push the button on the console? Like, nevertheless,
more feedback to respawn.
It's very good. The voice acting is great. I was immediately into Bodhi. I think is the, immediately I was like, oh, I like that guy. I like that guy a lot. Let's get a show for Bodhi, Disney. More intriguing so far than. Yeah, I mean, he's just cool, though. Like, he's just got, his vibe is cool. Even, like, when he's, like, because he's clearly, like, on your side. I'm real early in the game, too, by the way. Like, I'm back with Greece, and I've done the very, like, I found the antique droid, and I've done, like, the first spot that they make you do after that.
Yes,
and I'm just coming back. So very early, but it feels like there's going to be so much. And I was hoping to beat it quickly because I want to trade it in so I can get Spider-Man 2 for like nothing because I don't want to spend money, but I really have to get Spider-Man 2. So I have to beat it quickly. And also Mortal Kombat 1's coming out. Yeah, I might have to. I'm not like dying a lot. I mean, I've died once or twice, but it's one of those games where they're pretty forgiving with that. It's not like a long load time or anything, but, to get through with my freaking consumption, I also have kept up with What We Do in the Shadows. The season has ended. I love this season. I haven't really paid attention to what other people are saying. I love this show. I think What We Do in the Shadows has been a masterpiece, a show that I felt there's no way they can keep this going for five seasons. They have. And halfway through season five, I'm like, this has to be the last season, right? Because of what's happening. Somehow they have reset in a way that I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see what happens next. I want season six. So it's such an incredible show. And I've been keeping up with Only Murders in the Building, except I believe we're recording this on a Wednesday, and I should have a new episode to watch tonight, nice. Which I will. Matt, you still haven't watched Only Murders, right?
Of course not.
Dude, I know you don't do TV, and I don't either, for the most part. Obviously, that's not true this year. But man, I love this show, dude. Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez are incredible. But then adding Meryl Streep and Paul Rudd.
That's bonkers.
It's so incredible. I really recommend that show for everybody. It's a lot of fun, especially if you are into one podcast. Hello, Matt. And two, true crime podcast, because it's kind of poking fun at and also reveling in. I don't feel like it's not mocking people who like the show, but it also is definitely poking fun at some of the elements of that. But I've spoke way too much about consumption. Matt, what have you been consuming?
Thankfully, not a lot, JP, but I'm always here to listen to what you've been consuming as an auteur like yourself, which we'll discuss shortly. Always up for what you've been checking out. And I do need to watch more TV. I get it all the time from so many people of whose opinion I respect or trust. There's only a small handful, of course, and of course JB's one of them, who say, why aren't you watching this? You've got to watch this. Oh, I haven't got time for TV. A new Star Wars show? I'll watch that. Can't help it. I'm bad. I'll kick off there. I watched part four. It's part four of Ahsoka. That came out today as we're recording. It's now been moved. It comes out in the United States on a Tuesday, so they can mark it hashtag Tano Tuesday. Social media, thank you, which now means it comes out at 2 a.m. in the UK rather than 8 a.m., which was great for spoilers because I could wake up, not have it spoiled, you know, have a shower, watch it and not be spoiled. Now we'll wake up in the morning and there's images everywhere, and part four is extremely spoilerific in terms of what happens and major moments. You know, I know so many people have had it spoiled for them, and I know, and everyone says, oh, stay off the internet. No, basically, you know, it works both ways. You can tell me, oh, don't come online if you don't want to be spoiled. And I can turn around and say, don't be a jerk and spoil it for people who haven't seen it. Some people's job involves social media. That said, I thought part four was a blast. It is. I thought the last week's one was pretty good. I thought it was all right. This one was a blast. This is everything a Star Wars fan wants in this episode. I think I gave it on Star Wars Sessions. And I think I gave it 9 out of 10. Which is the highest of the season, because again, no spoilers, you get a ton of lightsaber action, a ton, and it isn't just thwack thwack smash. There is the whole series, it's Dave Filoni, the whole series a la George Lucas, it takes vast influence from not just Kurosawa but Eastern cinema. The battles have almost like an honor code. There's a lots of kind of long shots of the combatants as they get into their stance, size the other one up, have a few swings, step back, literally 5 steps back, change stance on the fly because it's very kind of a deliberately paced, and it really works quite well in this setting. There's a lot of lightsaber, but there also are some couple of lightsaber fights which are smash bang wallop, which are great. There's, you know, cool moments of ships, cool, very much a cliffhanger at the end of it. Loads and loads of things that happen, which kind of make you think, yeah, this is when people say, I want Star Wars, this is what they mean. This particular episode, there's so much that happens that is like, yep, but it doesn't feel callbacky, it doesn't feel like, ah, that's that moment from A New Hope. Oh, that reminds me of the moment from Return of the, none of that. It's its own thing, but it just inherently feels like those swashbuckling Star Wars adventures that make you smile and think, this is what I'm here for. As much as I think Andor is fantastic, you do sometimes need an episode like this where you think, yeah, I just want to see people thwacking each other with lightsabers and droids punching each other. It's great. So really enjoyed this one. Next week's one, part five, just to jump on that, is directed by Filoni, who alongside Lucas came out of the character. And in a fairly unprecedented, part five of an 8-part series is getting a cinematic release, very limited. They are having special screenings of next week's episode in select screenings in the United States and in London as well. I'm not going because it's 10 p.m. my time. It comes out in a few hours. I watch it in the morning. It's fine. But whatever happens next week is good enough for Disney and everyone to think, yeah, we're putting this one on the big screen. I haven't known a show to do that before, Marvel, Star Wars, or anything else. So hopefully they're building up something pretty good. And even after that, we've got 3 episodes to go. But yeah, part 4 of Ahsoka, I actually thought it was very, very good. In terms of what I've been listening to, JB, horror, again, very much like yourself, I'm very predictable in that sense. I've been listening, to The Horror Show, where they spoke about the 1983, I think, Slasher Night School, which is crap. But it's fun to hear people tear it apart. And Nightmare on Film Street, where they spoke about the 1983 horror, A Blade in the Dark, which is crap. So, but it's fun to listen to people rip them apart constructively. So I've been listening to that and double toasted again. In terms of films, though, JB, I've really fancied watching Megan, because Megan kicks ass. She's great. And somebody was talking about it at work, I think, was saying how much fun they have with it. And it was just a cool, silly horror film. I was like, yeah, I fancy watching that. And then of all people, my daughter, who's 7, we went shopping the other day on beginning of the week, and she saw Megan. She's like she just saw like a picture, and she said, oh, it's Megan. So of course I've sort of bristled. As you know, that is, what are you watching? What's going on with this? And apparently she just saw like a YouTube on YouTube, saw a video with Megan's face on or something, didn't watch it. I was like, oh God.
She went very viral, though, the dance.
100%, yeah. She goes, can we watch it? I was like, yeah, maybe not. Actually, to be fair, I wouldn't, because I'm responsible, of course, probably would. But you could get away with watching the theatrical cut. That's fairly, you know, fairly tame in comparison. Yeah. Cover your eyes a few times, but the unrated one's a little bit more brutal. But I just fancied watching Megan. I don't often go back. You know me, like you, I'm very forward-thinking sometimes. Just want to watch what's coming out, but fancy watching Megan. But I did watch a new horror film. In fact, I actually only got back from watching it about two hours ago. It's Cobweb, the latest horror film. I think it's the directorial debut, I believe, of Samuel Bodin. This one stars Anthony Starr, Homelander himself, Lizzie Caplan, and Woody Norman, a few other people, Cleopatra Coleman as well. And I quite enjoyed it, actually. It's funny because it starts off the halfway through, I thought, I'm sure, I don't know what the hype is. I'm not really sure I'm vibing with this. It just seems like every other child has, you know, child sees, hears things go bump in the dark, and the parents are a little bit weird and they don't quite believe him. And then for some reason, a substitute teacher takes a really big interest in helping him. I've seen this before, but it came apparent 60% of the way through that the film is all-knowing, all-seeing and all-knowing, knows exactly what it's doing, and then it kind of jumps into something else. It's not quite your Barbarian level of twist, but it jumps into something else and it becomes something else, and it ramps up that kind of B-moviness a little bit more, and I quite enjoyed it, actually. So originally I thought, no, it's holding me at arm's length. I'm not the biggest fan. I enjoyed it. It's not the best horror film I've seen all year, which some people have said it is. I don't think it is. I think it's very, very solid, though. I would recommend it. Why? Because it's an hour and 28 minutes long. Absolutely. I watched this. I took my mum to see it because she loves horror films. Film started at 7:15. By 8:10, we're out. Fantastic. And it's pretty good. Anthony Starr, Lizzie Caplan, she's very good. And I think she's embracing it. She's chewing the scenery and having a great time. Anthony Starr is solid. I think he's solid in everything he's in, really. But My man, all I can see is Homelander. It's so bad. I just see Homelander, especially some of the shots where he's got a, or moments where he's got to come across as a, you know, bit evil, or is he, or isn't he the good guy? My man, it's just Homelander. But that's not a bad thing. Homelander's, well, Homelander as a person isn't cool, but the character and the idea, people love Homelander. But yeah, Anthony Starr, very decent. Cobweb, decent. I quite enjoyed it. I would recommend it, JB. It's not the best horror film I've seen all year, but it's better than a lot of the other things I've seen this year.
It was not on my radar, so I'm adding it now.
An hour and 28 minutes long as well, but maybe you'll watch it and get it straight away, but it felt like, I was like, this is tropey as hell, man. I just don't know where this is going. Nothing working for it, but
it obsessed me when I say it's not on my radar, and then I go to add it to my watch list and it's already on my watch list. And I'm like, well, forgot about this one already. So yeah, it seems pretty mixed on Letterboxd, but only 88 minutes, I think you said, so.
Yeah, and that was very exciting. So I've had my popcorn and Pepsi for the night. I'm doing very well because of it. But the film itself may not have been bloody awesome, but in order to do this show, we have to remain bloody awesome. Each week, we have to ensure our bloody awesome-ometer is at full capacity. So, JB, how have you been staying bloody awesome this week?
Well, sir, as I mentioned last week, that I was changing careers, so this was my last week at my job. In fact, yesterday was my last day, which I have not quit a job in quite some time, 13 years. So it was hard to say goodbye to my students, especially. They were unabashedly kind. The amount of love and support also, because they were, while they're sad that I'm leaving, they were all, we're so proud that you were able to do this, that you got the job that you wanted. You know, like, they didn't have to be that way, and they were, which only made it harder in some ways. Matt, I will say, there are moments in my teaching career where I wish my lecture, I wish my speech, which are always impromptu, were recorded, because I think I nailed it. You know what I'm saying? And one of my students in my seventh period, we see every day, and this is a class that it was two different groups of my students mixed together this year. So like, some had me for 2 years and this was their third year with me, and some had me for just 1 year and this would have been their second year with me. But either way, they all have had me before. So there was a lot of connection with that class, and I've seen them every day this year, and I would have seen them every day going forward had I not left. And so there was a lot of emotional stakes in that particular room. And one of the students yesterday was understandably like, whoever they get, you know, it's not going to be you. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, please don't have, like, one, they shouldn't be me. They should be them. And you shouldn't expect them to be me. And, you know, went through this whole thing and it got very emotional. Cause I started tearing up for the first time. I really teared up in front of them and they could tell, and that made them tear up. The bell is getting ready to ring, right? Like, it's like 1 minute till the last bell of my time at this school. So I walk up to the door, I have my back to the door, and I say my final thought, and I'm looking at the room, and I know the bell's close, and I look across the room and I'm like, and keep watching movies.
Yes.
Which I say on this show, and I've said on every podcast I've been a part of my entire time as a podcaster. And I've never thought about, like, I've always known why I say it, but for me, film is a love language, right? Sharing movies, talking about films, I do with people I care about. And it's one of the reasons why I have such a close relationship to my students. So when I say keep watching movies, it is like saying I love you. It's like saying that sentiment to people. So I say that yesterday, both meaning I want them to keep watching movies. It is what we've spent 3 years doing or 2 years doing. Don't walk away from this just because I'm leaving, because I'm not leaving film. And films are not gone because I'm not teaching them. They still have every ounce of importance that I've said they have. So I mean all those things, but I also mean to them, I love them. But the bell doesn't ring when I finish my line, right? There's still some time left. So I'm standing there in silence. I'm trying not to cry. Some of them are crying. Some of them are trying not to cry. And to break the tension, because the bell hasn't rung yet, I'm like, what if I just walked out right now? Like, I'm like, what if I just left? Like, before the bell rang, before you guys are allowed to leave, I just left. And, you know, it cracked them up, because that's a very movie-like situation, right? Where the person just does something that they're not supposed to do. I don't do that. I stayed until the bell. But then, you know, all of them shook my hand on their way out. It very much had a Dead Poets Society kind of vibe of, like, my captain, my captain. And someone was like, you should have had a song playing. I was like, don't you forget about me from Breakfast Club is what I should have been playing. How dare I not have that blaring Harold, you know, Lloyd style. I should have had it on a boombox from, you know, Say Anything. And then that's right. But yeah, so it was emotional, but for the best. As sad as I am to leave my students, the I started the new job today, and it immediately feels like what I've been needing as far as my mental health and my professional growth. I think there's a lot of room for me to expand and stretch my academic nature. I hope one day to expand into film at the college level, but for now I'm very intent teaching computer courses. So that's how I've been saying bloody awesome, my friend. And thank you, Matt, for all of the support through my transition, because you have been one of my best friends over the last 7 years. And it's wild to say that since we have never seen each other in person. But I guess, you know, when you have a connection, it doesn't matter how far or how big of an ocean between the connection stands. So thank you for that.
No, anything to help my buddy JB, and to see what you've been posting on Instagram and the messages you've WhatsApped over. I said to you yesterday, I was looking at the collection of gifts and kind words, even in the comments. I read the comments and I said, damn, I'm not even the teacher, and it's getting me what choked up. Just, you know, it's nice to see some positivity and outpouring of positivity, because I would say, myself and John, we've been doing this show for best part of 6 years now. We speak off air. Every day we do movie quizzes. We just chat about donuts or whatever it may be. So I know, I've spoken to JB when things have been glum here, and JB's done the same, and it's been a tough time. So to hear that it's been, the transition has been successful. It's been worth it. Everything seems to be in a positive place. And whilst it was sad to leave your school and your students, who I know you're very fond of, what a way to go out, hey, as well. You've said your line. And then you're waiting and nothing happens, and oh crap, now I've got to drop a zinger. So yeah, and that's very, very cool to hear, JP, and long may it continue. Sadly, unfortunately, John, I just bought an air fryer. Hey, that is my retort to yours.
You say
it's an emotional thing.
I am unbelievably proud that you have an air fryer. Air fryers are the best thing ever. Yes. So is this your first one?
Yes, it's I am an air fryer virgin, and it's because of what you've just said. Everybody and their nan has said, I just hear people saying, oh, these things are great. You use an X amount of oil and everything comes out great. It's fully cooked and it's, you know, overcooked. I'm like, surely it can't be that good. So I was walking past a store whilst I was at work, to see, you know, payday last week, and I saw one at a good price. I thought, that's not bad. It was, you know, they say it's half price, and I think was it really 130 odd quid or 150 bucks before? I thought, you know, I'm not being suckered in by the, because it was down to like 59.99 to £60, no, 75 bucks. So I thought, I'm not being suckered into this. Anyone could say that. So somebody like me, a sucker like me, walks past and thinks, oh, half price, I'll get it. So I went online. It turns out that the original price was, in fact, 130 odd, 140 odd pounds, and they had halved it. I was like, damn, that's not bad. Too late for me to go and get one now. I'm back at work. So I went back the day before yesterday or this week some point to get it. And even the lady who served me, she said, oh, you know, I've got one of these and it's great. And I said, you guys, everyone's hyping this up. It better be good. Then she scanned it and it was £10 cheaper than it should have been. Like, this is the best day ever, as Barbie said, which is now the biggest film of the year. So I haven't used it yet. I'm going to use it tomorrow, just because by the time I finished work today, it was literally home. It was actually work straight out the door to watch Cobweb back in. So I had a nominal meal, whereas tomorrow everybody says chicken wings or something like that. That's what I'm going for to start with. Let's keep it classic. Go with the chicken. But yeah, I'm very excited. But it's a big step up for me, JB, in the culinary world. Everybody has said these things are the Mac Daddy of the cooking world. So I'm high hopes now.
I think you will not be disappointed, sir. I probably use my air fryer like every other day, if not every day. Like, it is sometimes just for fries, but like, I have made meatloaf in the air fryer. I've made just the other day, I made chicken teriyaki thighs. like we use the air fryer in this house quite a bit. So
damn, well, that makes me even more. You'll have to give me, JB sends me what he eats quite a lot, because he knows I like food. Now you're going to send me some air fryer stuff and recipes, because I'm gonna need them. And how many times have I used an air fryer before today? None. I thought you were going to say none too. Huh, funny that, because no. Oh, that's awful, because that is what we're reviewing next week. That's going to wrap up this week's episode of the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast with The Equalizer 3. We're taking a step back for next week and only doing a second installment of The Nun 2, which also describes my expectations for the films, none. And Sean has none too. We're going to go on for hours with this. But The Nun 2 is our film for next week. We joked off air that from a couple of weeks ago until about the mid-October, it is a pretty tough run of major film releases in terms of potential quality of them. But we're going to get through it for you guys. So let us know what you thought about The Equalizer 3. Were you up on it, down on it, or like us, fine with it? Let us know on Twitter or X at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast. JB, where are we on Instagram?
Bloody Awesome Movie Pod, and technically we're on Threads, but I have almost forgotten that exists. So
I am with you on that. We will also be on Blue Sky, but nobody uses it, so I'm thinking about I have an invite code because I'm on it, but maybe we'll be on that soon. Check it out. I don't know, probably won't be. We're also on Facebook at Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. Our Equalizer 3 reviews, what you've just heard, we are going to be adding that to the tomato meter on Rotten Tomatoes. We have not been paid to do that, and so maybe it'll go up or down compared to what it is at the minute. If you want to talk to me about films, you can do it at whatiwatchtonight.co.uk, or just search What I Watch Tonight across all of the socials, including Letterboxd. And John, if people want to talk Psycho or any films with you, where can they find you?
They can find me at burkereviews.com and at burkereviews on all the social media platforms.
Yes, sir. And if you enjoy what we're doing here, and we really hope you are, please do drop us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast provider of choice. Now it only takes a few seconds. You just scroll up, press those 5 stars, and you're done. And you don't even have to stop listening to us whilst you do it. We would really appreciate you doing that. Gets more listeners in, helps the show grow. We'll get to hear from more film fans each and every week. But with that, as always, stay bloody awesome.
And keep watching movies.
Wouldn't it be funny if I just left now? Blood, 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 bloody, 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 blood, blood, bloody. Awesome.